November 1967. The Devil in the Dance Hall. As the Friday of our first gig approached, we borrowed a van from our friend Pat Mulligan, the local farmer. It was a banged up old vehicle, and Pat, kind soul that he was, said he'd be happy to give us full use of his old banger, as he put it, for a song. Pat, who always saw the darkness in the most mundane of events, wasn't as enthusiastic about the location of our first gig. "People are horrid strange in that town, lads, and Clunloo Dance Hall is not a place I'd ever set foot in." When we asked him to elaborate, Pat said ruefully, "Let's just say it has a reputation. I'll say no more, but be careful, lads." We quickly forgot about Pat's dire warnings and set off for Clunloo Dance Hall that evening, every one of us a picture of innocence and joy at the prospect of our very first gig. The only dampener being a frightful night of thunder and lightning, with showers of rain and hail hopping off the van, which we felt would limit the crowd that would venture out. "You won't see a feckin' sinner out tonight, lads," said Dal McCormick. "Our first gig, and not as much as a drowned rat will be out." "McCormick, brother," said Dixie Flynn, "you're a fine drummer, but sometimes you do more moaning than drumming." "Well, at least I'm not a poser trying to play bass." The bickering was interrupted by the sight of a big, dark, imposing structure up above. It was enveloped in total darkness and would have been hardly visible only for the bolts of lightning from the sky that lit up the whole countryside every now and then and allowed us to see Clunloo Dance Hall in all its glory. "Whose bright idea was it to build a dance hall in the middle of nowhere?" said Desi, as we drove through the car park filled with potholes to within 10 feet of the bleak structure. "Jesus Christ, this place looks like it was closed down 20 years ago." "What did I tell ye?" said McCormick. "There's no light inside. There's not even a drowned rat to be seen. That collie character has taken us for a right bunch of clowns. Maybe there's a circus tent nearby. That would be more like it."
"Dal, you're grating on my nerves," I said, wanting to throw the drum kit on his thick head for casting aspersions on the music promoter I'd contracted with.
"Someone should go and see if there's a door open," said Flynn. It was I who ventured out into the awful night from the safe confines of the van, getting pounded by rain and drenched to the bone. As I ran up the steps and made for the door, my heart sank on arrival. Desi was right. This old building had the cut of a place that was closed down 20 or 30 or even 40 years ago. And I fully expected to see a sign that read, "Building Condemned." But it was an old battered poster that caught my eye. It was flapping away like mad while the heavy winds did their level best to unmercifully rip it off the wall. I stood frozen as I read that poster. Tomorrow night, yes, Saturday night, it announced that a band called Balor and the Evil Eyes would play. I'd heard of that band. They developed quite the name for themselves touring the countryside. They were much loved by all the women, and there was talk they'd even inked a record deal, which was quite the feat. But it was the smaller letters underneath that sent a shiver up the spine. Friday night, the sod happened. Back in the van, the lads marveled at the soaked poster I'd pulled from the wall. "A good performance tonight, lads, and we'll be getting our own record deal," said Desi, smoking a cigarette. A cigarette that gave both light and warmth. It also eased Desi's fragile nerves. "There's still no one here. What if it's been cancelled?" Before anyone could tell McCormick to keep a lid on it, a gentle tapping was heard on the van window. Despite the gentle taps, some of us jumped out of our skins, only to then feel foolish when we saw a wizened old man outside, his grey hair blown wildly in the ferocious wind. We rolled down the window to see a friendly face, the face of an old man who enjoyed all kinds of weather,
The type of man who, no matter the circumstances, was always happy to be alive.
"Well, ye are mighty men to be here on a night like this," he said. "May the man himself bless ye."
"We're the band," said Dixie Flynn. "We are playing here tonight."
"Don't I know well who ye are?" said the old man. "Bill Cawley told me all about ye, and if ye are as good as he says, then we're in for some night."
"So it's not cancelled?" said Desi.
"We haven't cancelled anything here since 1944. And that was only because the Germans thought they were dropping bombs on Churchill."
The old man looked up at the heavens, at the lightning and lashing rain.
"We'll take more than that to stop some of the young ones from coming here. You better get set up, lads, because in no time this place will be hopping from the floorboards to the rafters."
The words were hardly out of the old man's mouth when Clun Lu Dance Hall lit up in a one split second. The old bomb building turned into a place of magical splendor. Shadows that seemed to lurk everywhere now transformed into waves of young lovelies rushing towards the doors. The doll McCormack, who failed to see a silver lining in any cloud, was left speechless. He gazed trance-like at a woman whose outfit left very little to his poorly nourished imagination. "Was she not cold?" was all he could say. As we followed the old man to the dance hall, he noticed the side of the van.
"Bit of an accident?"
he asked, grinning. There's a fierce, twisty stretch of road between Knocknadoon Bridge and the village of Clun Lu. It's about 10 miles in all, and it's as lonely a part of the world as you are ever likely to venture, and all manner of haunted sightings have been reported there. It's a hazardous drive on the best of nights, and the lashing rain only made it more so. She appeared out of nowhere, and the sight of her in the middle of the road struck terror into my heart. God knows I should have run the bloody bitch down, but the real or phantom. But I swerved and ended up crashing into the side of the ditch. "Ah, bloody hell, Fergal," said Desi. I put my hands on my head in despair, and it was a wee while before I'd regained the composure to say something. "I'm sorry, lads. The road is creasy with all the rain." I jumped out of the van to see what the damage was. I torn a bit of the side, but the wheels were intact. I turned around, but she was nowhere to be seen. I'd taken a wee drop of whiskey that night. A harmless wee drop, and that was it. Like the other lads, I was suffering from a bit of nerves and a dose of the shivers, and the whiskey did nothing more than warm me up. I'd crashed because she was standing there in the middle of the road.
"Head to work up the courage, some easy boys. Just like a drunk feather.
"You get out of my life," I shouted like a madman, standing in the middle of the twisty stretch of road. "You get the hell out of my life." But I was only roaring at the night fog. 10 years in that institution had my nerves badly shattered. "Are you okay, brother? Are you okay?" Dixie Flynn stood on the road behind me. Both of us now soaked to the skin. "I don't know what happened to me." "Don't worry about it, Fergal. The van had seen better days to begin with. I don't think I can play tonight. Whisht, man. None of that silly old talk." Putting his arm around my shoulder, Dixie led me back to the van. "Come on, brother. We've got a gig to play." Once we took to that stage in Clun Lu Dance Hall, there seemed to be another worldly force driving us on, and all thoughts of the little crash were soon put behind me. Where amplifiers and guitars often took hours to configure, setting up here was seamless. In the darkness of the stage, I played a few practice chords on my guitar, and a sweeter sound the old antique never made. Desi walked over to me and, beaming from ear to ear, yelled that the songs inside him were just bursting to get out. He was certain he'd be paralyzed from nerves, but now could not wait to start. I looked over at Dixie and he too gave the thumbs up. Only the doll McCormack seemed a bit flustered. But that was mainly due to the distraction of the beautiful females who had descended on the dance hall. "It's like playing to a coven of naked witches," he said. And with that he let fly on the drums, and to the rapid staccato of his solo, more and more young lovelies bounced in through the doors. The spotlight suddenly beamed brightly on the stage, and standing there was the little old man, the caretaker. We'd never gotten his name.
"Thank you for braving the elements on this dark night, all you beautiful young people. And the admonishment of the bishop. But it was worth it, believe you me." With those words, the frenzy of cheering began. The blood could be felt shooting through every vein in my body. "Tonight I introduce you to four lads from the wee town of Ballydurica. The time has finally come to release these barking young hounds. Please give a big round of applause for the sodhoppers."
Outside, the angry heavens opened up further as buckets and buckets fell from the stormy skies. Mighty blasts of thunder could be heard all over the land, and the old dance hall shook like never before. In the tremendous burst of energy, our amplifiers exploded into action, and our first gig began with an earthquake of absolute sound. Desi grabbed the microphone and his deep vocals echoed around the dance hall, like a god ordering his devoted flock from the highest mountains. Every lyric from his mouth an immutable and eternal truth. McCormack pounded on his drums like a wild man from the Stone Ages. Dixie, like a marvelous marble statue, plucked his bass. And I cut the chords on my guitar like a butcher hacking a cleaver to a dinosaur's spine. A rushing river of light shone down on the pulsating bodies that trod in the front rows. Big bosoms bursting out through white blouses drenched to the bare skin by the awful rain. Every now and again I'd look to see if I could recognize my brother in all the madness. He was a year older than me. He could be very well here. Would he know me? What would he look like now? Was he free like me? Was he out there dancing like all the other beautiful young people? These thoughts would make me sad, but then I'd be distracted by other temptations. Girls with hungry black eyes devoured our every move. Their long snake-like tongues, it seemed, picking out the notes on my whole green pickup guitar, creating new melodies, taking us along strange winding roads where wild new beats were found around every corner. What in the name of God were women the like of this doing at Clunlu Dance Hall? Sometimes my eye would catch one, then another. Sometimes I was playing a guitar, but sometimes I was in another world, in some dark field with hundreds of these gorgeous beasts crawling all over me. I was transported to this mad, frenzied world without consuming any strange substances. All I had was the mug of tea and the little drop of whiskey, and hours ago at that. Before we knew it, the night was over. We played for 3 hours non-stop, with the exhilarating atmosphere increasing in intensity by the second. When the caretaker at the side told us to wrap it up before the guards arrived, he simultaneously said the magic words that hauled us back to reality. We'd given every last ounce of energy to the gig, and all four of us were ready to collapse in a heap of exhaustion on the stage. But not before we heard the screams of approval from the hungry hordes. I could see the tears in Desi's eyes. I saw them in Dixie Flynn's and in the Don McCormack's too. It wasn't all that long ago since we were all dying skeletons in that industrial school. I knew they were tears of joy. But a wise man also once said, in these moments of extreme happiness, you can't help thinking that you'll lose it all again. The lights went on and the night was gone as quick as it came. So too were all the beautiful young lovelies. Where had they gone to? All that was left was an empty dance hall floor strewn with paper cups and empty bottles.
Power down, lads, and I'll pay ye outside.
It was the old man, and those words signaled the end of a night we'd never ever forget. In the early hours of the morning as we made our way home, it continued to lash heavy rain. But no weather could have dampened our spirits, such was the enduring high from our very first gig. That the old man paid us handsomely capped off a brilliant night. "Those girls, my brothers," said Dixie Flynn. "Did you see the setup of some of those brazen hussies there tonight?"
"I don't know how I remember the words of any song," said Desi. "I was completely transfixed in one beauty all night with raven black hair. I sang every song for her. Actually, my only regret is that she left before I could say hello."
"I had my eye on one too," said Don McCormick. "I'll be honest, when I was hitting those drums, my mind was on something else. It'll take me a month to cool down."
"It won't be easy, but we mustn't give in to temptation, brothers. It'll be the ruination of us all," said Dixie Flynn. "Let's wait until we have a hit record or two, and then we can have all the women in the world to our heart's content." No one said anything, but deep down we all knew that Flynn was absolutely right. We'd somehow played a blinder tonight, but if our ambition was to gawk at women's chests from the stage, then the music would invariably suffer and soon there'd be no chests to look at all. It was a paradoxical and indeed frustrating state of affairs, but the one eternal verity, the one cardinal rule, all the same, and one we'd have to follow with an air of religious zeal. Severe tiredness was now starting to set in, and Desi pressed his foot hard on the pedal, as driving on these dark roads was no place to be on a night like this. With eyelids starting to droop, I fell into a deep sleep, only to be violently awoken by the screeching of brakes. My first thought was Desi, drunk with weariness himself, had driven into a ditch, and we'd crash for the second time that night. It didn't help either that the roads were still in such a terrible state. Deadly dangerous, they were now essentially rivers of rain. But as we skidded along the road, some dark figures could be seen standing in the middle of the road before us, with a van of their own all lit up inside, the engines running and black smoke bellowing from its exhaust pipes. Christ, it's a miracle I didn't run into them.
"What are these clowns doing in the middle of the road at this unholy hour?"
"Maybe their van has broken down, brothers," said Dixie. "I think they're looking for a bloody showdown," said Don McCormick. He wasn't a man for optimistic answers, but to be fair to him this time, he had a point.
"Let's turn around, brothers," said Flynn. "The last thing we need is a fight with a gang of late-night criminals."
"I don't think they are criminals, lads. Look at the sign on their van." The headlights of Pat Mulligan's van fought through fog and rain, just enough to showcase the big bold letters, blood red letters on the rival van. Surrounding the image of a fierce mythical creature, the infamous Fomorian of legend, were the words, "Valor in the Evil Eyes." I looked at the old torn poster I'd pulled from the Clunloo dance hall. Tomorrow night's headline act were blocking the road, and somehow I had the feeling that it wasn't due to a flat tire or an overheated engine. It was an act of pure intimidation. It was all about unnerving the new upcoming band. If we turned back now, somehow I thought we'd lose all credibility. Word would spread throughout the land faster than lightning that the Sodhoppers were a crowd of mollycoddled wimps. The beautiful women with the short skirts, the sumptuous breasts and the skimpy blouses would hear all about it. And it's a well-known fact that females of that vintage prefer the bad boys. They wouldn't be seen dead at any of our concerts, ever again. They certainly wouldn't be crawling all over me in my wildest fantasies. On the other hand, if we try to get past these shady-looking characters, there could be a bad beating or two, severed heads and dismembered arms, the inability ever to play the guitar again. It was a tough call.
"Fergal," said Desi. "Let's jump out and have a word with these idiots. Dixie and Dal, be on standby in case you're in need.
No problem, said McCormick and Flynn in unison, though one would have had to search hard for a note of confidence in their quivering voices.
Desi and I walked up slowly towards Balor and the Evil Eyes. Though the lights of our van shone on them, they still appeared engulfed in darkness. We could make out at least 7 of them, with their leader Balor to the forefront.
Stop right there, a voice warned.
We assumed it was Balor himself. I didn't know what he looked like, but he was renowned for his film star looks and was equally famous for wearing an electrical jacket of sorts, designed with flash bulbs in the form of menacing eyes. It would light up every now and then, and some said if you looked at them for too long, you would go blind. The lady certainly loved him, and there appeared inside the van a herd of beauties he'd rounded up for the night. I could have swore I'd seen some of them at our concert that very night, and Desi obviously reached the same conclusion, for I heard him mutter under his breath with a fair hint of annoyance. Last time I'll sing a song for you, my dear. It didn't take us long to guess that Balor himself must have flew into an awful rage at the thought of his harem of dark beauties enjoying a rival band. The old dog had to claim his territory back.
What do you want? Said Desi.
You boys don't know what you're getting yourself into.
Worried about a little competition, said Desi.
Go back to cutting turf while you still can.
Balor stared us down for a good 2 minutes, and nothing was said at all in that time. Without any more pleasantries, Balor and the Evil Eyes got back in their van, and with an almighty roar of their engines screamed like hellfire into the night.
Go back to cutting turf while you still can.
Desi muttered these words all the way home before adding, she'll be riding my van soon, and you'll be nothing but a feckin' nobody, but a ridiculous jacket, Balor. Dixie Flynn tried to lighten the mood by talking about how handsomely we got paid that night. He stuck his hands in his pockets to wave those lovely green notes in the night air. But a night that began with such spectacular fireworks, exhilarating music and phenomenal bodies, ended very badly indeed. There was no money in Dixie Flynn's pockets. There was no money in Desi's pockets. There was none in Don McCormick's. And the horrible realization dawned that there was none in mine either. Me, who had received payment from the wizened old man at the end of the night, and who dished it out evenly to the grateful paws of my colleagues. Christ almighty, who stole our money? It must have been Balor and his evil-eyed fuckers while we weren't looking. I could only think of the warnings from my friend Pat Mulligan. Let's just say it has a reputation. Be careful, lads. The kindly face of that old man and that handsome payment at the end of the night would stay with me until the day I died. I later learned that Clunlu Dance Hall had developed a reputation because the devil was said to lurk there. The provincial newspaper, The Western World, had ran a scathing article on the dance hall, stating that very few would miss the cursed old building if it was burned to the ground. Gil Hooley, in an impassioned editorial, called it a cesspit of sleaze and evil seduction, a dance hall of depravity and defilement. Even the bishop had condemned this very dance hall from the pulpit, calling it a
vile place where young people, at the devil's beckoning, give in ever so willingly to the temptations of the flesh.
It appeared to us that not only did he lurk there, but he also paid the bills. And much to our chagrin, paid those bills in the currency of his choice. Went home and slept for a day or two. A little bit poorer, but a little bit wiser too. But I couldn't stop thinking that maybe Balor was right. Maybe we should go back to cutting turf, while we still could.
Oh.